morning, everyone.
Good morning.
We're going to continue our series, Reading Underwater, this week. And each week, in all these weeks leading up to Holy Week, all the way through Lent, we are going to be studying Richard Rohr's books, Breathing Underwater, which is learning and studying the 12 steps. Last week, we talked about that we're all addicted to something, whether it be a substance, a behavior, or patterns of thinking. We can get stuck in our own patterns of thinking. We become addicted to those patterns in thinking that we're right. And our hope through this series is that we can break free from these patterns of addiction and that we can be spiritually transformed by making this journey through the 12 steps. There's a deep spiritual question at the heart of this process, this journey, is the question, how do we keep on living when we seem to be drowning? So step one, we discovered, is that we are powerless to these patterns. Richard Rohr identifies three programs for happiness that all of us can find ourselves addicted to. We become addicted to security, to affirmation, and to control. And we think, I can speak for myself and say, I think that I have the power to break free from those patterns on my own, but I discover over and over again, no matter how much I think that I can control these things, really, I can't. And I keep doing the same things over and over and over again. So step one is recognizing my own powerlessness in those patterns. And also saying to myself, I am not God. I do not need to be God, and I can let God be God. This week we're moving to step two, desperate desiring. Step two of the 12 steps states that we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So this is an active step on the journey. Came to believe. So this morning we're going to ask questions. How do we discover this renewed relationship with God? This step involves an opening of ourselves where we must go inward, go deep, and begin our inner work. And this step begins with three spaces. Richard Rohr says that we have three spaces which we can open up: our head space, our heart space, and our body space. So let's talk about head space first. Our head space can become blocked. We can get caught up in what he calls stinking thinking. I like that. It's catchy. I get caught up in this all the time, this kind of stinking thinking, this thinking that I am right, I understand the world, what I perceive is correct, and that my way of thinking is the right way of thinking. When our headspace gets trapped in this stinking thinking, we can become opinionated, we can close down our minds, and we can shut out other ways of thinking and being in the world. So how do you break this loop, this cycle, this pattern of these repetitive thoughts of thinking, I am right? It's ego thinking. It's as if my ego is the center of all things and is interpreting things in the correct way. How can we break free from those patterns? How do we create open headspace? I like my headspace. I'm a thinking person. I like to be rational. And an open headspace is one who can kind of take a step back and see a bigger picture. I often use art or poetry to help me open my headspace. Also, I discovered that being in relationships with others and hearing things that are different from my way of thinking in the world help me to relax. When you have an open headspace, you feel comfortable with disagreements. You feel comfortable with people who think differently than you do or believe differently than you do. And you also find that you can be comfortable living in paradox, which is the tension between two things that seem to be opposite or in tension with each other. But you can discover that those things which appear to be in tension really can find harmony when you find that you can open up your mind and live in that space. One of our core values here at the Barn is to agree to disagree. And that is an important value where we embrace a diversity of opinion, of thinking, a diversity of culture and class, a diversity in all aspects of life, because what we discover is that when we only have conversations with people who look like us, think like us, act like us, talk like us, then we begin to close down our minds. But when we have the courage to step outside of that pattern and embrace people who see the world differently, we can open up our headspace and see God's beautiful creation, and we can see God at work in all people. Heart space. A blocked heart space. Shut down. Closed off. Closed off to feelings and emotions of others. Closed off to empathy and understanding toward others. When we have a closed down heart space, we become dead. What are some of the spiritual practices that help you open up heart space to others? Do you all have spiritual practices to help you open up your heart space?
Come here.
Read the Bible.
Music in all forms has an amazing way of opening up your heart space.
Serving others.
Serving with others.
Journaling. Being willing to listen to the concerns of others.
Builds empathy.
Praying and listening for answers.
Being in nature. And Jim just took the kids out in nature, and they're going to be talking about opening up their heart space today with wonder. So that was a beautiful message that Jared shared with us this morning. It's a great way to open up our heart space. When we open up our heart space, it brings us back to life, because all of those things that we named this morning really enable us to connect with others and see our interrelatedness with all of creation and all human beings. I think the most difficult space, or the most difficult step in opening up our heart space, is when we've experienced pain or some kind of woundedness or grief in our past. I think that can often prevent us from stepping in or opening up our heart space. It's this idea that, I see this sometimes in our wider culture, that pain is bad or negative, and that we should do everything we can to rid ourselves of pain. It's almost like a cultural message that we can receive sometimes. When we do that, we close down our heart space if we're trying to shut out or hold ourselves back from that woundedness. The courage of this step is being willing to face our pain, our grief, our suffering. All of those things are signals to us. And it is hard to do, but we can embrace that struggle, that grief. Because the more we ignore our pain or shut down our hearts, the more injured we become. So the courage of this step is being willing to face and open up our heart space. So our third space is our body space. Our bodies can also hold on to pain, our woundedness, our past hurts. Where do you carry your woundedness in your body? Mine is right here, in my shoulders, your back, your knees. I know some people carry it in their gut. My husband, who's not here, carries it in his chest. Where do you carry your woundedness in your body space?
Your jaw.
Your jaw.
Your head.
Head. Stress. When you're stressed, you can feel it, and it closes down your body. And there are practices that can help us open up our bodies to being receptive to the presence of God, to help us face our woundedness or address our stress and our past hurts. And there are different ways that we can use touch and hold our bodies as healing centers. What did Jesus often do when he was offering healing to someone else? He would reach out and touch them. Jesus was the consummate Jew, and he saw his God as personal, intimate, and conversational. The beauty of Jesus' Father was that he could adjust to circumstances, forgive, show mercy, and change the rules for the sake of the relationship itself. Divine union itself was not the goal, not private moral perfection. Life was not a courtroom for Jesus, but a living room. Kitchen, a bedroom. Whatever worked to bring us to relationship with God was to be used, and Jesus used it because he knew God did the same. For Jesus, body and soul were not enemies, and body and spirit were not enemies either, but both worked together as friends and partners. It's a quote from Richard Rohr. So the question is this morning, how do we open our mind space, our heart space, and our body space? How do we reconnect these spaces so that we can open ourselves to the presence of the divine, that we can come to believe that God can restore us to sanity, to peace, to healing, to comfort, that we can move through and hold on to the pain of the past, so that we can move through it and find the healing that we so desperately need. So one of the ways that I find that I'm able to connect all of these spaces for myself is through Scripture. And I thought we would do a fun activity this morning. Jared's going to say eyebrow. But we're going to do this, okay? I love the parables. The parables are amazing to me because Jesus' parables open things up. They blow your mind. They're meant to disturb us. They're meant for us to think about the world differently, open our hearts to people who are unlike us, who we wouldn't normally be in conversation with, and they really embody a different kind of message. My favorite parables are parables where Jesus is talking about sitting at a table and eating with folks, mostly because in Jesus' day, he always ate with the wrong people, and I love that. The people who were often in power would be completely critical of Jesus because he wasn't eating with people who looked like them, thought like them, act like them, believe like them. And so I thought we would do something a little bit different as an activity to help us come to discover a new way of thinking and loving and being in the world. So I want you to embrace a character in the parable and really hear it from that perspective. So you can choose whichever one you want, but then we're going to talk about it together, kind of chew on it, so to speak. Now, there's going to be a man who's throwing a party. You might choose to be the man who's throwing the party, because who doesn't like throwing a party? You could be an invited guest to the party. You could be the servant who goes out to fetch the guests. homeless or the hungry. So how do you, in those shoes, experience this story? Let's read it together. That triggered a response from one of the guests. How fortunate the one who gets to eat dinner in God's kingdom. Jesus followed up, yes, for there was once a man who threw a great dinner party and invited many. When it was time for dinner, he sent out a servant to the invited guests, saying, "Come on in, the food's on the table." Then they all began to beg off, one after another, making excuses. The first said, "I bought a piece of property and need to look it over. Send my regrets." Another said, "I just bought 5 teams of oxen and I really need to check them out. Send my regrets." And yet another said, "I just got married and need to get home to my wife." The servant went back and told the master what had happened. He was outraged and told the servant, "Quickly, get out into the city streets and alleys. Collect all who look like they need a square meal, all the misfits and homeless and wretched you can lay your hands on, and bring them here." The servant reported back, "Master, I did what you commanded, and there's still room." The master said, "Then go up out to the country roads. Whoever you find, drag them in. I want my house full. Let me tell you, not one of those originally invited is going to get so much as a bite at my dinner party." So how did you experience this story? Paige has a microphone, so if you would be willing to wait for Paige to come around with the microphone, that would be wonderful so everyone can hear you. How did you experience this story? Liam?
No, we need you to have a micro recording of the service. I want to make sure everybody gets heard.
I went up the servant, and it made me feel good to invite people who looked like they needed a meal to a great feast. And it made me think more highly of my master because he was inviting all these homeless people into his home.
I was a servant too, and I felt rejected when they made excuses and had to keep going out again and sort of like drag them in rather than coming home.
Okay. I love the story. I don't think of myself as a master, but I think of myself as a part of the thrower, and I love having people over, and as soon as you start talking about it, Marty's like, you're the master. But I love it because the juxtaposition between these people who are invited to always and the people who are never invited to is so poignant. And I love the fact that you're able to have this person who's able to throw a lavish party, get outside his or her own head, and reach out to people who don't always feel like they're as much as. And some of the richest experiences I've had in my life are times when I've had people at my home who wouldn't have been people that are my very small inner circle. They've been people I know very little about, and it's been so enriching for all of us. Because sharing outside of your regular comfort zone brings us so much growth and joy. And so I think it's an awesome story. I love it.
I threw the party. I'm going to tell you a true life story about throwing a party. My wife and I threw a party one time, and at the last minute, somebody said they couldn't come, and it wasn't a good excuse. Okay, it was very hurtful for my wife, and she was hurt a long, long time because this person. Now, fortunately, we had some other people that were there, and we had a good
and I felt like I explained it as properly as I should to possibly get them to come here, and they all had silly excuses, and I watch how they live their lives and where they're stuck. And I don't know if I'm supposed to get mad about it or continue to believe in free will and faith and just let it go.
Well, I identify with this parable because I was an inviting guest to the barn. So when I listened to the parable, I just felt relief because I was invited to a community of believers that exemplified everything that Jesus did, which is why I'm still here today. So I'm the invited guest.
That's what it's designed to do. Because I put myself in the position of the party thrower as well. And when I really thought about it, what I was reading was, it sounded like I threw a party where I wanted my friends and my circle to be there. I wasn't really intending to invite the homeless and the people on the country roads. I really wanted to invite my circle of friends. And when they didn't make it for whatever reason, valid or not, I got a little mad about that, and out of spite, then I opened the door to other people, and I said, "Listen, I just want my house full." And it was really more about me and my ego than it really was about inviting other people to my house. Mm-hmm. So that's, as I put myself into that position, that's the way I interpreted that pattern.
Shouldn't the person have invited those other people first? Like,
yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. This is the beauty of parables. The beauty of parables is that there is no answer, right? We each come and interpret the parables. We chew on them. They disrupt us. And as we're midrashing, that's really what we're doing. We're interpreting together. We're hearing all of the different ways. I always put myself in the opinion, in the place of the people who, like, the guy who's got to check on his property. Mm. I see myself as that guy. Like, that is my journey. My journey is, I am constantly distracted by all of these other things, and I never make it to the party. It's just who I am. The interesting thing is as I hear Jesus teaching me in this parable, I see this parable as a way for me to take my head space, my heart space, and my body space and just be open to the presence. I always wonder why didn't Jesus invite those who had that open, that willingness, that vulnerability to just come instead? Because could you imagine being a street person and being invited into a wealthy person's house? I would be terrified to walk into their dinner party. There are so many questions. In a parable like this, I ask more questions than I find answers. But I think what it does is it teases me to discover something more about who Jesus is and who Jesus is inviting me to be, to rid myself of my own ego and discover the depths of my own soul so that I can continue on my journey of healing and transformation. So I hope this parable has opened up your head space and your heart space and your body space in a new way to discover something about yourself, to discover something about what God is doing in your life, or how God is encouraging you to take new risks and have courage on this journey. And I hope that you might think a little bit more and maybe you start passing around those orange papers that we usually don't mention until the offering time. But if you have another nugget or a piece of wisdom or a question or a wonderment about the message, maybe you can start thinking about that now, even before we start our prayer time together, that we can continue to wrestle with all of this. And hopefully, as I'm skipping through my sermon. But hopefully, as we move through this step, it also goes back to the last step, to speak to us about powerlessness and about breaking those old patterns. How can we open ourselves to receiving the presence of the divine so that we can continue on this journey? Amen.